Hey everyone, welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
Oh, hold the door. Oh, I got it now.
And welcome to the show. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing better than some people.
Well, my
other thing was going to be, please don't let the Red Witch take off her, the new Red Witch take off her necklace. Keep it on.
It was just too, from this point on.
It was just too long, so. Because you know what's going to happen. She takes that necklace off and be like, oh, come on, man.
Well, yeah. Anyway, is it Varys? Is that the bald-headed gentleman?
Yes,
yeah, that's the. Yeah, you can say bald-headed gentleman. Yeah.
Well, if the necklace is taken off, Varys will be thankful that his member was cut off anyway, so.
Exactly.
There's no need to be around.
Even if he had his member, I'm sure he wouldn't have had one after that.
That's actually what I'm saying. All right. Anywho, we are here after another action-packed episode. Like, it's the show's moving at a pace right now that I don't understand. Well, at the same time, I do understand if they're going to get to an end here. But Nick, as the connoisseur, the most versed in the verse. What's your thoughts here with another I thought a fantastic episode?
Yeah, it was a pretty good episode. Like you're saying, it's really fast paced, and that's where I think a lot of people are noticing the differences between these first few seasons, where George's writing was so influential and slow paced to that slow build. This season is primarily just the show producers writing, and they're just boom, 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 and it's almost kind of like Lost in how the first three seasons were kind of drug out, and then 4, 5, and 6 were just like, oh my God, like, let's just get to the end. And that's what it's feeling like to me.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Me as a viewer, I feel like it's a good thing, because I just like, we're finally getting to the, I don't know, we see the light at the end of the tunnel, and we're going towards it. The Lord of Light, we see him there burning people, and we're running towards it for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is good that things are getting answered and things are getting resolved. But then there's some things that I felt like with the way Hordor died, I felt could have, I think it was because I'm sure George R. Martin told them like how
he
Hordor
did.
Got his name and how
he's
going to die. But it kind of felt to me like this should have been more of an endgame type scene versus a mid-season type scene. Like it just seemed really quick because like Bran just started his training and all of a sudden it's just like, whoop, like here it is. And you're like, oh crap, like, he's getting thrown to the wolves. Or to the zombies.
These zombies move a little quicker than the ones in The Walking Dead.
A little bit.
A little bit.
But if we're thinking that this is the fifth episode, we're halfway through the season, so I don't know. Like, if this is the halfway point, what's the end going to be to this season, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
Someone's going to die.
Because if you think, if you think about it in the sense that Bran, where is he going to go to? A lot of people are thinking going to go to Jon Snow and his brother and sister to support them. So that makes sense if they're going to fight Ramsay, which I would think would be kind of the conclusion of this season, is trying to reclaim the North.
I was thinking, can I add something? I was thinking wherever the Starks go, people die. So I would just, if someone's named Stark, I'm saying, you know what? You can just keep going.
Well, that's the benefit of Jon Snow being named Snow. So it's like, is that his lucky charm?
Because it seems like everyone around the Starks die.
You know, I wonder if...
including the Starks.
I wonder if we go back to the lineage of Glatfelter, if it was once upon a time called Stark.
I bet you it was. Well, people don't die, but they're just cursed.
Yeah.
Now, I had a question for Nick. Was Hold the Door in the book?
No.
No,
not
so
yet.
So did they, you think they knew this the whole time when you say Hordor, Hordor, Hordor?
So it's confirmed that George R. R. Martin told about Hordor's backstory
to
the producers of the show. So they confirmed that.
And he was always he's always close to Bran. So I guess they've had this plan since the start.
Well, George has, yes.
Right.
George has.
Well,
I mean,
I
thought it was pretty amazing.
Plan. Yeah, it is. It's a grid reveal. But as in, will it come in the next book? You don't know. It could happen in the next book. Like I said, you don't know if George, he just told them certain stories. Like, this is how the show's going to end. This is, like, the end result for this character. But he didn't tell them that it should happen at certain stages. So they're kind of just throwing it in there, I feel.
Because Hodor, he's kind of not a throwaway character, but he's not a main character.
He's kind of a fan favorite, if you will.
Well, he's a fan favorite, but it's still, he's not like, you know, he's not a Stark. But it just, when the whole thing was going on, I'm like going, and then I go, oh, hold the door. And then we got closer. I go, okay, now it makes sense. And then the way they went back and forth with it, I thought it was pretty good. And then you're like, oh, no, don't kill him. I know he's just a guy, but don't kill him.
Well, now he's going to be a zombie, which is, that's another scary prospect.
Yeah, well, that's true.
But this is just a theory, but like my own theory, but you're saying like where are they going to go? I would bet heavily that they head towards the Neck, which is where her father is from, where she's from, where Mira's from.
Mm-hmm.
And then even possibly down a little bit more south to the Isle of Faces, which is this little bitty island near Harrenhal. It's a secluded island in the middle of a lake, and it's full of these weirwood trees with the faces on them. So it could be kind of the same thing as the cave, as in he can easily warg into these green sea into these trees and still have his power there. That's where I would bet.
What's with all this face stuff? You have the face here, things of faces.
Yeah,
the house of faces.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, but the weirwood trees with the faces on them. That's how, at least supposedly in the books, that's the faces are how Bran and the Three-Eyed Crow. A raven, how they see into the past. They're seeing through the trees because these faces have been seeing time, events throughout time. So they're seeing basically the memories of the trees, kind of in a way.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. A lot of stuff seeming to be revealed. We kind of saw how the White Walkers became. But again, it seems like the book fans, and it seems like you, Nick, included, are kind of getting a little thrown off, or not say thrown off, that's not the right word, but maybe a little, you guys are apprehensive to the pace.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas me, just a TV show viewer, I'm loving it.
Right, no, I mean, I definitely appreciate it, that things are going, but I can see the pacing differences between mm-hmm. the first few seasons versus this season, because it's just like everything that happens is a very important point. It's no longer a scene of a little bit of a tease of what might happen and let you think about it for a minute. It's just like, no, there's no more room for that. Like, this is happening. Boom, there you go.
It's going to happen. You just got to prepare yourself because it's going to happen.
That's right.
Sit back and enjoy the show.
Well, let's take a moment here to thank people that make this show possible, make it possible us to talk about this show that we're enjoying so much, and that's our patrons over at patreon.com/JayandJack. If you would like to become a patron today, it's basically you got to contribute whatever you can, a dollar or more a month to help the production of these shows. If you'd like to become a patron, you can do so over at jayandjack.com, and then click on the Become a Patron link. It'll take you right to our page. And then everybody, whether you contribute a dollar or more, gets a thank you. On our website, there's actually the thank you list on our website at jayandjack.com. You can check that out. But big thanks to all of our patrons that make this show possible. Another part that makes this show possible is Loot Crate, our partnership with Loot Crate. For less than $20, you get a box of geeky goodness to your door. $45 value over at lootcrate.com/jayandjack. You also get a special discount when you use the promo code JayandJack. All right, guys, let's jump into this episode and talk about what happened on the fifth episode of this season of Game of Thrones, The Door.
Wow, five episodes.
We're at halfway point. There's only five left.
It's going by fast.
But it opens up with Sansa receiving a note from Littlefinger, and you can see the his mockingbird or whatever his little symbol there on the seal. And they asked to meet at Molestown, which is that little small village that was raided by the wildlings, where Oily came from back in season 4, I think. So when she arrives there and you see her standing, you can see like the door's kind of broken open. That room looks really messed up because there's no one living there anymore. And then Sansa arrives there. Littlefinger claims that he's ridden all the way from the Vale with an army of the Knights of the Vale to come to her aid. And they're currently encamped in Moat Cailin, which is at the Neck. So it's basically the border of the North.
Were you waiting for her to say, just stop helping me?
In a way, yeah, she was pretty apprehensive. She didn't really want. Right. I mean, she was out for blood, and I actually liked this scene a lot because it showed Sansa having a backbone, demanding answers. You know,
yeah, because he was backing down a little bit.
He knew he was outnumbered, or he knew he had no case.
Well, Brienne was there too, so he's not messing with her. So, couple people today were thrown off their game.
A lot of people, Sansa, people were getting frustrated with the characters. Like, come on, like, how much do you have to be put through to start standing up for yourself or to start, you know, having a spine? And she went through some horrible stuff last year with Ramsay that made some people just quit watching the show to a certain extent. And we're seeing her now just galvanized and kind of really taking on this strong queen-like role, which is cool to see. But is there a little bit I guess she's upset, but if I was her, I'd be like, well, he's going to give me an army and I need men. Or is it she's smart in the sense because you can't trust Littlefinger anyway? So why have people you can't trust?
Exactly.
I wouldn't trust him as badly as you need him. Why would you trust him?
Well, it's like I said. Like, his motivations are he will become Warden of the North or possibly even King of the North if he defeats Ramsay's army, because Cersei's already promised it to him. So she's making the right call to not trust him. But I have a feeling that he's going to do what he wants regardless of what Sansa wants. But I did really enjoy her forcing him to guess what Ramsay did to her. Because that's what she's trying to do. She's trying to see if he knew how Ramsay was. And then just by his answer, you know, she kind of was that way, saying, I guess you do know a little bit of Ramsay. You know, like, did he cut you? Did he? You know, and so he knew. I mean, and she knew that he knew.
Yeah.
He apologized.
Go ahead. I was going to say, because people, you know, she was young, though, when a lot of that stuff was happening. She's growing up. I mean, she's hardened by it. But she was just a kid. When she was with Joffrey, she was just a kid. I mean, she had a lot of growing up to do. So for people her to be strong and stand up for herself, sometimes it takes time. You have to mature into it. And I think at this point she feels she has nothing to lose. I mean, what more? Only thing worse could be would be death. And I don't think she cares anymore. She wants revenge. Mm. Anyway, I'm kind of defending her because she was only what?
No. I think people are really enjoying Sansa.
Well, I think they are now, but before they hated her. They hated her character.
Oh yeah.
I hate's a strong word, but
hate. They hated her character. They wanted her.
Would you
to
call
die.
Her? Would you call her the Kate of Game of Thrones?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I don't know about that.
If she climbs a tree this season, then she's Kate.
No, I think
if she's still someone's baby, then she's Kate.
From a developmental standpoint, I really like the turn Sansa's taken here. And again, to Nick's point, this is a great scene where she's basically kind of putting Peter in his place. So
and Littlefinger normally is on top of his game. He's not. Usually a few steps ahead. Mm-hmm. She had him, you know,
dead to rights. Basically,
she had him up against the ropes, pounding away at him. There was nothing he could do. He knew he was wrong, and he knew that she knew.
Yep, exactly.
But it's kind of going back to what we were saying, though. It makes me question, because he does offer her an army of the Eyrie, of the Vale, and she turns it down. Like, no, just go back. But she needs the troops though to win this. She's like, I'll do it myself with my brother, which he points out. Your half brother. So she's like, you know, don't trust him. You can't trust him. It's just really weird. It's like he's like planting these seeds of doubt in her head, which I thought was an interesting way.
That's the question. Is it worth having this army if you can't trust the guy that's leading the army? Or can you trust anybody? I mean, it's tough. Right. But he does give her some parting information.
He does. And this is a way of kind of getting back, I think, for the producer to get back to the books, because there's a whole other story that hasn't been told that's still in the books, and this is a way of getting back to River Run, which we'll get into a little bit later. But he basically says that your great uncle has rebuilt the Tully forces at River Run, and he has an army, so you might want to seek him out for his aid. Which I really, this really, it's a strange thing to me, because I mean, the War of the Five Kings just ended. I wouldn't think that the Tully forces would be that strong, considering the war just ended. A lot of them died at the Red Wedding, and you still had the Lannisters and everyone else to the south of them. Why would they all of a sudden just leave and head north to help?
Or is he lying?
Right.
I mean, you can't. Why would you trust him here when you just proved you can't trust him?
Mm-hmm.
He could be setting you up for a trap.
He could be. But you have Brienne and Tarth with you, so it's going to be okay.
But I think, I mean, I'm not sure if that's where they're all going. I think she's just sending Brienne down there. I'm not sure if all of them are going, because I can't see Jon and Brienne and Tormund and all the wildlings going to Riverrun. I think they're probably going to encamp somewhere in the north or seek out another lord and encamp there while Brienne goes south to try to bring in this other army.
Okay.
Because that's what it seemed to me.
Yep. Same here.
Or he's setting Brienne up for a trap, and just because Brienne won't leave Sansa's side. So
Brienne is leaving Sansa's side, though.
I know, but I'm saying, but Littlefinger, maybe he wanted her out of the picture. I don't trust the guy. I'm sorry.
I know you don't trust him. I mean, it's good not to trust him, but I don't know if that's the play.
I didn't trust him in The Wire, and I don't trust him here on this show.
But anyways, moving on.
Okay. All right, moving on. The next scene, we go to Arya, and she's in training with the Waif and still getting the crap beat out of her.
Those some slick moves, you know, once you put down the stick there.
Oh, my God. Heck, yeah. My mom was sitting there going, wow, she's fast. but, the Waif is kind of – I'm not sure if she's testing her or she just genuinely doesn't like Arya, because she's sitting there, taunting her. You should go home, you know. You don't really belong here. And then she puts down the staff, and just beats the crap out of her. And then she says, you know, you'll never be one of us, and then kind of insults her by calling her Lady Stark instead of no one like the other two are.
Well, the man with no name or man of whatever he is.
Jaqen H'ghar.
Makes a good point. Like they all kind of came from slaves or these poor people, but you're like a part of the aristocracy in a lot of ways. So is she ever going to truly be somebody? Or a no one, a girl who has no name or whatever.
Right. I mean, that's the way I've always thought about Arya, is that she's just kind of playing them. She just wants to get her training. She wants to become an assassin so she can finish off her list. I mean, she never really wants to be no one. At least that's kind of what I think.
I agree with that. Well, I think it showed that during the play.
Well, the play is interesting because... Well, let's wait till we get to there, not to skip ahead.
I'm sorry.
Is there any more we want to talk about here before we get to the play?
Let's see. Okay. So, as Jaqen H'ghar is leading her through the Hall of Faces, he tells her. Let's see. Here.
Kind of the history of it, right? Kind of the history of their.
It's not the true history, but because it's never in the books, it doesn't say that the city of Braavos was founded by that house. It is true that Braavos was founded by slaves, escaped slaves from Valyria, but never of just that house of black and white. So that's a little bit of a change, but not a big one that's really a deal breaker or anything. But he gives her a bottle of poison, to which she says, you know, who am I to kill? And he says, an actress, and you're going to go, I guess, find out how to kill her, that you've been given a second chance now, and there will not be a third, because one way or another, a face will be added to the hall, which I assume means either you're going to put the actress's face in there or it'll be Arya's herself, because they'll kill her if she fails again.
Some high stakes there.
Yeah.
Better not make a mistake.
Yeah. Now we're at the play, though. And I really enjoyed it. This is actually a chapter from the forthcoming book. It has been released just online of her... In the play.
So, I mean, really, I thought this was interesting because it's her kind of maybe getting some updates maybe she didn't know, because I don't think she knew about Sansa and getting married to Tyrion and stuff like that, right?
Right, exactly. She knows, of course, obviously about her dad, and she knows about Robert Baratheon. But, yeah, seeing this is news from the time she's been on the run, so she didn't know anything about her sister. She probably didn't even know if Sansa's even alive.
Right.
Yeah. But I did love it. I did love watching it.
Was it a test? I mean, to see if she would go through with it? I mean, it was pulling at her heartstrings. I mean, you could see she was upset by it.
I don't know if that's a test so much, right? Or
right, I don't think it was a test so much.
Well, this is the play you send her to? I mean,
I think it's just an aside.
It's relive her dad's death.
Well, no, I think it's to her, it's not so much a test, but I think as a story piece, it's to kind of get her, to give context to her journey, I think. It's less about, it's a test within it, in what she's doing. I think it's more to give context of her journey and where she is now, and then also kind of updating her what went in the past. I think it's more of a story device or a plot device than some type of test for her to get through. The test is to kill this actress.
Right. I wondered, you know, because I loved her facial expressions of while watching this, because at first she's happy because she... It's funny to make fun of Robert Baratheon and things happen to him, but when she starts to see how they're portraying her father, which is not exactly how it went down, you know, is she upset because people are going to believe these things about her family, or is she upset because she's reliving these same events? And it's probably a combination of the two.
Yeah,
yeah, I would agree.
And then after this is over with, she goes backstage. And just find out, I guess, who she's supposed to kill, where she actually finds out who Lady Crane is. And she realizes that she drinks rum, whereas the rest of them are drinking wine. So she has her way of killing her. And she informs Jack and Agar of this, like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to poison her rum. He's like, okay, that'll be good. And then she requests if she can take a face from the hall so she can disguise herself as another person. But, of course, Jack and says, no, you're not ready for this, which I found was odd because she's already done it once before. And use the face as someone else.
But that was kind of... But it was kind of against the rules when she did it, right? So...
Right. It was.
That's probably why.
But I thought this was interesting, you know, that she... Arya is kind of showing a conscience here. Because she's like, you know, she's a good actress and a decent woman. So, like, obviously Arya doesn't want to kill her. So it makes you want to wonder, will she go through with it? Because... Like Jacken just said, you've already been given a second chance. So if you don't kill this woman, you know, then most likely Arya's going to lose her own life.
Yeah, and how can really, if Arya wants to kind of move on, how is she going to escape from them? You know, like, I feel like there would be a hit against Arya at that point.
And it's not like she could. It's not like she could see one of them coming because they always, you know, change their face.
Yeah.
Right.
But Jack and Agar basically says, you know, what's it matter? The price has been paid, so you have to kill her. And, you know, you need to decide quick if you want to serve the many-faced god. And she says, I do want to serve the... And he said, good, because servants don't ask questions.
Yeah. That's a good point. Good point.
Very, very good. All right. Moving on to the next one, you have Bran is having another vision. And this time, if you guys noticed it, we're seeing... a scene of this of a bunch of spiral-shaped stones, mm-hmm. which we've had almost every season of a formation. And this one's around a weirwood tree in the middle. And it's the same symbols of the horse heads that the wild White Walkers did. And it's also in the very first scene you see with the soldiers. It's this weird spiral. And that should have been the first clue that all of a sudden, like, holy crap, like, the Children of the Forest are in league with the White Walkers. But Bran is seeing a group of the Children of the Forest pushing a piece of dragon glass into the chest of a human man, and his eyes become blue, and he is the origination of the Night King.
Oh, so that was the Lord Commander that was turned into the Night King?
I was going to get into the book section a little bit, but yeah, exactly.
Well, we'll save for the book section, but... Some people, I think it was on our Facebook group, I can't remember the name, said it was like a little tick that was kind of, so that's kind of like a TV show or a cable TV move. That's not a George R.R. move to kind of show us how they kind of were created. How do you feel about that in terms of the reveal of how the White Walkers came to be?
Yeah, I don't believe that for one second, that's how the White Walkers came to be. Not in the book. I mean, I'll go ahead and say it now. But because, like I said, you started to say it, in the book, the only thing we know is from old man stories, and that the Night's King was created well, not created, but he was a former Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. He fell in love with a White Walker, and so he became one of them. That's all you know. And so I've always just assumed that's what we would see somewhere down the line, through one of Bran's visions or something, that he was originally a human being, and that's what went on. So this was, to me, a little weak, just because I like the old Nan story better.
Well, now,
and just the fact...
My question here is, do we know for sure that the one that got the dragon glass in his chest, that was the Night's King? Or could that just be any old walker?
It could just be any old walker, for sure.
It could be the first one. I mean, eventually, it could be the Night's King.
That's true. You're absolutely right. Because, but you know, Bran just wakes up and says, "You created him," and she's like, "Yes."
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't. Maybe hopefully the show will clear it up.
Because if the Night's King is supposed to sleep with a Nightwalker woman, then they got to start. There's had to have been them before the Night's King, so it could still be somebody before the Night's King. So that. The old man story could still be true.
Mm-hmm.
So you're telling people to lighten up and just relax.
Or if it's an old man story, it's just hearsay. It's a legend as opposed to what actually really happened, like we've seen with Ned Stark and his story, which is a theme that's repeating in the show that we've seen so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that
happens in real life. So.
Mm-hmm.
But. So I guess the children of the forest created their own monster, essentially.
They did, to defend themselves against men, because that's something in the books and in these the histories of Westeros books that shows that the children of the forest it was kind of like a, you know, they lived in peace. You know, all the trees they were very much nature hippies. You know, they were. And then when men came along, they cut down all the trees for firewood to build houses, and they just wrecked their entire ecosystem. So they thought, okay, we need to, because they're small, they have just magical powers. They're not an army of steel. So I guess they created them in a way to, I mean, it makes sense. Like if you, men don't tend to live in frozen, cold areas. So they thought maybe they would stay out of those areas, I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then kill them off. But it backfired, obviously, because that's why they ended up building the wall, the wall and everything else.
To keep him out.
Yeah.
My other question is, actually, we'll wait till we get to it, but is all the children of the forest that are left are with Bran, or is there more out there?
We don't really know, because they haven't been seen in thousands of years at this point, because they basically disappeared, and... no one had seen them. They'd almost become mythical themselves. Like, no one had seen them because they kind of had this camouflage and invisible quality to them. And, of course, they're living in caves in beyond the wall, which no regular man goes to besides the wildlings.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be extra ones out there, but as far as we know, book-wise and story-wise, these are the ones we've seen.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Moving on to the Iron Islands, we see the King's Moot, which is the election process for the new king. Yara Greyjoy steps forward first and claims the Salt Throne, and to which a man quickly kind of interrupts her and says, you know, we've never had a queen. But Yara, I think she makes a pretty good case. You know, there are many things that we've never done before, and for the first time, we should really make our mark on the world, because all we do is raid, and all these powerful families just... kind of ignore us, and then finally they'll conquer us and then kick us back to where we belong.
Yeah.
But so we everything about us is, everything that's powerful about us is the ocean, not the land. So we need to build a mighty fleet and really start claiming who we are. And to which, you know, everyone,
which makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Cause I mean, that's what they are. They're basically the pirates of this world. They have a few islands, and that's what they do. They just make their living off of raiding ships and islands.
Yeah.
But before she can finish, she's interrupted again by a guy who says, "You know, I don't care anything about you. I want to hear from the male heir, Theon." And this is another, I think, good example of just facial acting, and the fact that Yara realizes at this point that Theon, her future is in Theon's hands, and because he could have said, "I claim it right now for myself." But no, he actually does the thing he promised he would do, And he proudly proclaims that Yara is the rightful ruler, you know, because she's been a warrior, she's ironborn, she's a natural leader, and she'll be a great queen. And that then we see it. I didn't want to cheers her up. Go ahead.
That was great acting by her, because you could see her just looking at him like, what is he going to say? What is he, you know, is he going to betray me? It was fantastic. I thought it was fantastic.
But yeah, it was great acting. And you see, though, after she's done, after Theon's done, cheers just erupt for Yara, like, you know, Yara, Yara. And you kind of think, oh, great, she's going to be, she might be king now. But then Euron Greyjoy, Balon's brother.
It can't be that easy.
It's Game of Thrones.
Yeah. but Euron Greyjoy steps forward, and he also claims the Salt Throne. And you see him just put down his niece and nephew pretty quickly, of especially Theon. You know, he's like, oh, you're a failure. You know, you couldn't even conquer one little castle, and you're not even a man anymore. And so I guess that's why you support a woman.
Chop, chop.
Which is just, yeah.
It's messed up. I would have killed him right there.
I was waiting for Theon to do that.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Euron's pretty bad at, you know, pretty tough dude. So I don't know if I would have.
Is he like a Sinbad the Sailor kind of archetype dealer?
Yeah, well, they've combined him and another character into one. So yeah, he's supposed to be like a bad, best sailor / pirate, and also a witty person at the same time, which is two actual characters.
That would be two against one, and Theon's really not himself, so that wouldn't be fair.
Yeah, and he's missing fingers and toes, and yeah,
he's barely one
vital thing.
Yeah, he's hanging on by a
thread. Yara, of course, they haven't seen Euron at this point, and she asks, you know, like, when did you get back? And he said, oh, a few days ago, or not too long ago. And then Yara already knows, like, automatically, okay, so you're the one that killed my father. To which she says, okay, once now I'm queen, my first action will be to execute the man that killed my father. And you can see the caution in all the men's eyes, because, like, oh, wow. And then that shocked me. Euron actually just admits it. You know, he's like, oh, yeah, I killed him. Because he was leading us no big deal. He was leading us nowhere. He led us into two wars we couldn't win. I apologize for not killing him sooner. And you can just see the momentum now just heading towards Euron, because he's just this strong guy. And Theon tries to salvage the situation. He goes, yeah, you might be strong, but you aren't here. You haven't been here. You've been out gallivanting all over the world. You know, Yara's here. She's the Ironborn. She's been preparing us for our future glory. And then you have, he goes, and how's she going to do that? To which she interrupts and says, I'm going to rebuild the fleet. And he goes, oh, he goes, and who's more experienced than that? He goes, I've been the one who's been sailing. I'm the one that's been, you know, seeing the world and know how to use a fleet. And basically he says, there's someone else that hates the Seven Kingdoms as much as we do. And she has a large army plus three dragons and no husband. So he can see where he's going with it. I'm
going to
gallivant. Yeah, exactly. But I'm going to gallivant right over there, and I'm going to give our fleet to Daenerys Stormborn, and to which cheers erupt for Euron, and he is elected the new Salt King.
He was going to give her something else that Theon was kind of like, really? Again, you got to put me down?
Yeah. Come on, man. Bro code.
Come on.
You're my uncle.
That's not right, man. But then, yeah, we see the Euron's baptism. My dad was, like, freaking out the whole time. I'm like, oh, my God, are they drowning their king? I'm like, no, this is what they do. Like, it's what they do, that they have to, what is dead may never die, because obviously they're killing him by drowning him. And then, so now, like, don't be afraid, because this is our God. So he arises as the new Salt King. And then immediately looks for Yara and Theon. They're not there. And he says, okay, let's go murder them.
It intersperses that with them fleeing, essentially.
Right. Yeah, they're just taking off. Because, I mean, yeah, he's definitely a threat. If he doesn't mind killing his own brother, he's not going to mind killing them either. Especially
why wouldn't they just try to kill him? Like, I was like, why don't they just try and kill him right there? Why let that one fester?
Yeah, that would be the Game of Thrones thing to do.
That's what I thought, but then I'm thinking, well, Theon.
Poor Theon.
But they cleverly, though, took the best ships with them. And then so Euron, I mean, they're going to have some, have a little bit of time.
The best ship, it looked like they took like all the ships, it looked like. So they at least had a lot of people with them.
Exactly. That's what I wonder too. Like, where were these people when she was trying to steal votes? You know? I'm like, good gosh.
So I didn't want to stand out in a crowd, so. Yeah. What do you make of the theories that they're going to go try and join up with Jonathan Snow?
I would support it. It's a pretty good idea. There's only one other thing I could think. I would probably wager on that as well. That there's only, I know where it's pretty much going with Euron. Mm-hmm. And so I kept trying to think, like, okay, what can Yara and Theon do to steal back the Iron Islands? And I guess there's only one thing they could do that wasn't shown when Euron made his case to be the new king. I guess that would be it. Like, that way they could join their army with Jon's, and Jon could maybe take back the Iron Islands for them, or like together in the future. We'll see.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah. And let's see. Okay, in the next scene, we got Dany with Jorah, and she's talking about his banishment. And there's a short but nice scene, basically saying, I've already banished you twice. And because of this, I can't take you back because it would make me look weak, basically. But you've also saved my life, so I can't send you away. And then Jorah basically rolls up his sleeve to tell you have to send me away because I'm dying. To which Dany gets a little emotional because she doesn't want him to die. And she says, is there a cure? And he goes, I don't know. Then he admits that he loves her, which I was actually surprised he did that.
Yeah, it was really sweet.
I'm stone in love.
Oh, I was like, oh.
I'm stone. And then she starts to cry, and she's like, well, you need to go find a cure. Because I love you.
No, she orders him to go find a cure. It's so sweet.
I order you to go cure yourself, but really, you can't come back, but you could come back. I don't know what's going on anymore.
Because she needs him when she takes the Seven Kingdoms, which will be forever, apparently. And that's pretty much the scene. Then you see Dany riding out of Vaes Dothrak with her entire army as Jorah rides off into the sunset.
So is this the last we see of Jorah, or is he going to find the cure?
I would think that maybe this is probably the last we see him for this season.
Oh, definitely this season.
But,
have you heard the theory? Have you heard the theory out there that Tyrion is suffering from the same ailment, and they're going to have to find the cure to save him?
No, because I know a lot of people have claimed that he did get touched too.
Yeah, people are thinking. The reason he's still around is because he has to find the cure to save Tyrion.
But wouldn't Tyrion have already had shown it, or at least looked at it? I mean,
he's been busy and drinking, so.
That'd be kind of like that'd be a little bit weak sauce to kind of. Show that. I don't know. I think it would be a little
weak sauce.
Yeah, a little weak sauce.
A little weak sauce.
Because I'm just saying that it's kind of cheap. If he got touched, just show it.
That's weak sauce.
But how would they introduce that, you know?
I don't know. I'm just saying, I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying it's correct. I said, have you seen the theory out there?
Where's this theory? Where did you find this theory?
I didn't write the weak sauce. I think it was on Twitter. But I only saw it once.
I think it was on Twitter. This is some Trumpian fact checking here.
Hey, I just repeat what I see.
So does
my theories are so great. My theories are the best. Let me tell you, my theories are the best. Yeah,
it's not my.
Let me tell you, my theories, they're the best. I mean, people love my theories.
Yeah. No, I stand behind my theories. I fight to the death for my theories.
The wall. Yeah. The wall I'm going to build makes the wall in Game of Thrones look small.
Yeah. No. And I'm going to tell you, the White Walkers are going to pay for it.
Yeah, they are.
But yeah, no. I don't know about that theory, but I did really like that scene. It was a good kind of wrap up or conclusion for their relationship.
It was weak sauce. Khaleesi doesn't cry.
But she did. That's why it was so beautiful.
Khaleesi showed weakness. Anyway. Dothraki don't follow Khaleesi that cries.
Well, they were separate from the Dothraki.
Even her dragons were like going, really? You're going to cry?
They've been together since she was a wee little
The dragon said, that's just weak sauce.
A pre-Khaleesi. Pre-Khaleesi. Anyway. All right, let's move on here.
Okay. And in Meereen, Varys inquires about the murders that have happened in the city by the Sons of Harpy, to which Grey Worm says none. And it appears that the deal Tyrion struck in the previous episode with the Masters is working. And then Grey Worm says, at least for now. But Tyrion is still not happy, though. He goes, we need to make a case that the people know that Dany, the queen, is responsible for this new peace, that it just didn't simply happen, that it didn't stop. You know, the people need to believe that she is working for them, for the benefit of them. But we have to find somebody that the people can trust and rally behind to believe, to promote Dany.
Yep.
And then, yeah, enters the next scene where a red priestess is brought in from Valyria. And Tyrion is really trying to be, I guess, peacemaker or in between. And he's being nice. He's trying to thank her for coming. And she says, oh, I want to help because Dany is the one who was promised. She was reborn in fire, and she's here to wash away the sins of the world through her fire. She will now return to Valyria, at least I think she's what she said, and to go to the high priestess there, and they will begin to spread the word that Dany is the one who has come to lead us in the current war and the great war to come. And this, another great scene I felt after this was all presented, of the Varys and this red priestess's scene, because another great facial acting scene of, because he doubts her. He's like, you know, well, one of your priests has already claimed that Stannis Baratheon was the prince that was promised, and now he's dead. So,
and Tyrion's almost like trying to get him to stop.
Stop it. We need our help.
Yeah, but then
Ex-nay on the
Baratheon Bay.
But Varys almost got like little fingered. He was like, go on. Go to the scene where he got put back in his place.
You never
see him looking that way.
Right. It's because like the whole time you're thinking like, who is this woman? Because yeah, so he's saying he's putting her down from a religious point of view. You know, fanatics are always right. It's always the Lord's will. You know, you can't own up to your mistakes. And she says, well, you know, we trust in, you know, why, you know, and he's like, why should we trust in you? Because you clearly can be wrong. And then she kind of goes back to the old falter, like everything happens for reasons. You know, if not for your own mutilations, you would not be here, Lord Varys. Should I repeat about your mutilation what the voice in the flame said? And you can just see it in his face, like, how the heck do you know this? Because he was just a child, you know, when it happened.
Well, I'm not as young as I look.
Right. And you see it, you even saw also in like a couple sentences earlier that she even knew that Tyrion had witnessed one of the red priestesses in Valyria talking. And, you know, and he was covered up with the robe the whole time, not really showing his face. So it's like, how did you know that he was there witnessing? So obviously there's some kind of system that they're not privy to. She does come to the steps, though, where Varys is and reassures him, though, like, I'm here to serve Dany. And as long as you're faithful to her, you have nothing to fear from me.
But is it almost like in a similar way, the deal that Cersei made with the High Sparrow, is this a deal that could come back and bite him? You know, is this a deal making the deal with the devil?
I don't think they'll go that route with two of those. But because they really are servants, as in they service the Lord of Light, which they actually believe that Dany is that reborn. So there's a difference. She is God versus the Septons in King's Landing think that everyone should just be humble and serve God.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense.
So they think people need to be taken down a step.
Gotcha. Eat some of that humble pie.
Well, yeah, exactly. Which is what everyone should do. But I enjoyed this scene. I thought it was nice to see, because Varys has always been such a confident, master of whispers.
Always a few steps ahead.
Right. Yeah. And then all of a sudden for someone to say, you know, nothing to him, basically.
You know nothing, John Varys.
Yeah.
I guess I don't.
Okay. So then we go on to Bran, and he's kind of laying around bored because the three-eyed raven is. Yeah. Well, he was. He's just laying there, and he's like, starts throwing rocks at the three-eyed crow. Like, are you awake?
It wasn't even rocks. It was like bones. It was like finger bones.
Yeah. Oh, were they? Okay.
Yeah, he's like picking them up.
It wasn't rocks. It was something.
Okay. he sneaks over to the weirwood tree and grabs a hold of a root and immediately returns him back to the same place that he was in the previous vision of the spiral stones with the weirwood tree in it, where the White Walker was created. But this time, I'm pretty sure it was present time. It could have been in the past, but now it's all winter, it's snowy, and he sees the army of the dead all just looking outward. And he starts to walk towards the White Walkers. And surprisingly, the Night's King actually notices him. And then when this happens, all the dead turn to look at him. He starts to get freaked out. And then they pan over. And then sure enough, the Night's King is standing right next to him, reaches out for him and grabs his arm. And Bran wakes up in fear. And you're just like, holy cow!
Yeah, that was...
You don't see me, do you? Oh...
Yeah, well, I mean, again, if these White Walkers were made from the Children of the Forest's magic, it kind of makes sense that they would be able to see him.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, yeah. But you want to know, like, what are the extents of the Night's King's powers, and how could he do this? Exactly. You don't know. It's something that I'm really looking forward to learning about. But, of course, the three-eyed raven now wakes up because Bran freaked out, and he says, the Night's King saw me, and then the guy's like, he touched you, didn't he? And he's like, no. He goes, I don't think so. He's like, no, he did, and he left his mark on his arm over his handprint. And that leaves a lot of questions, too. It's like, okay, so is this like a tracking device, or is it now, is Bran going to be able to be tracked by him for good, or is it just this one time? Or is it even so freaky as in, like, will it be like the grayscale that, like, Bran might actually start turning into a White Walker himself? Because, like, he just touched that baby. He just touched that baby on the eye.
I forgot about that.
So, I mean, that was like, oh, my God, what are the implications of this?
Yeah.
Bran screwed up is what the implications are.
Well, what do...
Yeah.
I want to conclude with this theory that's going around. I'm sure everybody's seen it. So, let's continue.
Weak sauce!
It's not weak sauce at all. It's a classic case of the student being impatient and then bringing about the death of the master. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's weak sauce.
Agent of evil. You must not go.
Yeah.
Okay. The Red Raven says, now Bran has to leave because the Night's King can now come inside the protected cave because he knows where he's at. And this was a question I thought was really the way he phrased it. I mean, I didn't think about it at the time, but a lot of people have speculated on it. It was that, they said the time has come for Bran to become the Three-Eyed Raven. He goes, it's now the time for you to become me.
Yep.
And that has made a lot of people curious, as in, I just took it as means you need to become as powerful as he was, not as in, I think this is what you're starting to lead to as well, Jay. Was that a lot of people think that the Three-Eyed Raven is Bran, like an old version of Bran.
Yep.
Which I don't really believe that. I can't see that happening, because that would imply that he actually has physically time-traveled back instead of just green-seeing into the past.
But it's just, I guess. But with the whole Hordor thing, like, it's obvious he can have a direct impact into the past and then affect the future. Or he's already done it all. Like, whatever he's done, past, present, future, is happening in real time, because Hordor, he did that in this episode, but Hordor has had that since he was in the past, so it's not like a Back to the Future thing where you don't really see the effect until he does it in the past, and then it happens in the present. Like, it's just a continuum in terms of how time works. So, like, I feel like it does open the door for Bran, that to be an old Bran, essentially.
Yeah, but I'm just curious, like, how does Bran get back physically into the past?
Once he becomes one with the tree, maybe that's how he can kind of intersperse through time through the tree.
Mm-hmm. Because like with Hordor, it's different, because that's one of the reasons why you're not supposed to warg into another human being, is because you're basically taking over their whole being. You're now them, and you can be trapped in them and take over. So essentially what happened with Hordor was he warged into him, and at Hordor's death, Bran was still inside of him. And so there was no essence of his life. And so all past Hordor knew was what Bran was hearing over and over, which was hold the door. At least that's how I interpreted it.
Yeah.
And so his brain, his soul, was no longer in his body, so he's just a simpleton at that point.
So what happens to his soul?
I don't know. Lost. That's a good question.
Yeah. No, it's a dramatic finale. Like, again, that's kind of something, to your point, that you'd see towards the end of a season, not in the middle of the season, just in terms of just holy crap, crap hitting the fan.
I don't see Bran ever leaving the cave in the books. I mean, I can totally see this being a towards the end game scenario where it's at the very last battle for it all, where Hordor is doing this. You don't find out to like the last couple of chapters in the very last book of, the White Walkers are attacking this place, and Hordor is he's warged into him to defend the hill kind of thing. And then Hordor dies, and then the book's over. As in, like, okay, we defeated him, and that's it. Like, in a big epic battle or something. That's why it was a little bit of a letdown for me, but even though it was a great, great scene, I was kind of like, oh, I didn't expect this to happen right now.
A lot of people die. I think all the children... Like, so the White Walkers and all the undead attack the cave. And... For all intents and purposes, it looks like most of the children of the forest are dead. We lose another dire wolf. Like, can we lose? How many are left now? Was that Summer that died? Is that the name of that one? What's the name of that?
Summer, yeah. There's two. We have two left. We have Ghost and Summer and Namira.
Now, will that become a zombie dire wolf?
That would be freaky.
I hope not. I hope. But again, like, Summer didn't have to die there. She should have ran with Bran and them. Should have went with them.
Yeah.
Was protecting
this Bran. That made a lot of people mad too, because it seemed like it's just a throwaway death. Like, oh, we don't want to CGI a direwolf in, or we don't want to have a pay for the husky to act anymore. So let's just kill it off.
But that's what it would do though. It would protect.
Mm-hmm.
It would attack. It wouldn't sit back and it wouldn't run, unless Bran told him to run.
But Bran was warged into Hordor, so...
Yeah, so I think it's legit. It's a legitimate... It's what would have happened. So I have no... I mean, I didn't want to see it die, but I think that's what would happen.
Another White Walker gets killed with some...
with the Dragonglass spear.
Yeah, Dragonglass. They've lost three people, right? So do they have a finite amount of them, or they keep making more, so it doesn't matter anyway?
We don't know. We actually have no idea how many true White Walkers there are, because Gilly said, is that all the boys are given to Craster's babies. All the boys are always given to him, so there could be,
that's true.
Literally dozens of them.
Yeah.
Where I bet you at their home base, there's probably something where you can shoot something down, a small little millimeter type thing that would destroy them all. There's probably something, some defect, something that you can destroy them all.
The dragon glass. And then I think arguably it would be the dragons.
No, I'm saying, but there's their home base, so if you shoot the dragon glass through a tiny little thing and use the force, it will defeat them all.
Nice Star Wars reference.
Will they have to do it three times?
At least, because there's billions of them. So it has to be something that's going to kill them, that kills them all.
I think the dragons. We've talked about it before on this podcast. The dragons with take them out.
But there's billions of them. I mean,
no, we're talking about White Walkers, not the undead.
Yeah, but the undead too. I mean, who stops them from coming? Who control? I mean, I guess you control the White Walkers. I guess you control the dead, right?
Both. I think fire counters them on all fronts. So. All
right. Okay.
It's a song of fire and ice. So
well,
I think
they walked right
to.
Through the fire. Didn't seem to bother them.
But dragon fire?
Yeah, Oh, yeah. The dragon fire. Yeah, that can't. That's I don't know.
It's a whole other ball game.
Okay. It's a lava fire. Versus
they didn't even phase them. They just walked up the fire and went.
But that was a little stick fire. Big whoop.
Yeah. They cooled it down, too. They froze it.
Yeah, they froze it.
Why are dead people worried about fire? They're already dead.
So also, what was so important that Three-Eyed Raven had to show him back at that scene? Was there anything we learned from that, or did it just kind of get lost in the chaos of the siege of the cave?
Well, obviously, the Three-Eyed Raven was teaching him that he actually could manipulate time in a way. Because the senior singer is when Ned leaves Winterfell as a child to go be fostered at the Eyrie. But I mean, I guess the Three-Eyed Raven knew the exact moment that Hordor became Hordor, or Willis became Hordor. So he was showing him that's why I don't believe that the Three-Eyed Raven is Bran, is because if he had this power, he could have done it himself to be able to war into things in the past. But he knew how to see into the past. And he's showing... I'm kind of losing where I'm going with this.
No, but my thing is maybe he lost the power to warg eventually, and then all he could do is go in the past. So that's why he had to have the young Bran do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're making some good points, Jay. Yeah.
And that's,
I still don't believe it.
But that's the point, is that Bran has both the green sing and the warging ability, whereas I think the Three-Eyed Raven only has the green sing ability. And he's showing him that by the consequences of warging into a person will have an effect on us. And he had to show him that moment to show him that power. That if he green sees back into the past, if he wargs into somebody in that past, it will have, a ripple effect, or it does affect things. Because, I mean, one of the best theories I think out there is also that, because Bran the Builder is one of these Age of Heroes people who built the wall. It's like, who's not to say that Bran goes so far back into the past that he wargs into another guy and says, we need to build this wall to prevent the White Walkers back, thousands of years ago.
That's true.
Could happen.
It could happen. It could happen. And then we have the dramatic close to the episode with them escaping and Hodor holding the door. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, because we kind of merged those two scenes together. But in Winterfell, though, Jon Snow, Sansa, and Davos are discussing strategy.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Right, and Sansa claims that the Karstarks will side with them because they originally signed a side with the Boltons because they didn't know a Stark was alive. And they make the case, the North will remember, and once they realize that there was Stark, the North will rally to us. There are lots of other houses and then just the Umbers and the Manderleys and the ones that have rallied to them so far. And then Sansa points out that the Tullys also now have a rebuilt army, and they may rally with us. And then moves on to Sansa and Brienne. This is where she's saying, we need to go down River Run and And Brienne's objecting a little bit because she's worried about Sansa's safety, because she's like, you know, who are these people we're with? And she's like, oh, don't worry. She goes, I trust in my brother. I trust in John. She goes, well, then why did you lie to him about River Run, about not saying? Yeah, exactly. Because it is a good point. Why she doesn't answer it. It's like, why did you lie to him? And maybe that's from that seed of doubt about that Lord Baelish, Littlefinger, said to her, like, he's only your half-brother. Don't know, like, but she did lie to him.
I think she just wanted to reveal that she did meet with Peter, that's all. I don't think she wanted to show her cards. She wanted to kind of blow up her spot.
But if she trusts your brother, then you trust your brother.
Yeah, you got to hold a little bit back. She didn't want to, you know?
Nope. She made him a coat.
That's true. That shows love and
it
trust.
Was sweet.
Right there.
I wish I could have a nice cloak like that with a bunch of dead animals on the shoulders.
Yeah.
I'm sure it smells really nice.
It kind of reminds me of that mink coat in Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah, great movie.
Yeah, fantastic.
So we get to see a nice another flirting scene with Torment and Brienne.
Oh, my God.
There is magic there. That's so funny. I mean, there's so many great memes out there right now of just him raising his eyebrows at her, and it's so funny every time I see it.
She's not happy.
But yeah, no.
But they're hooking up. They're hooking up eventually.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if Brienne, like, is she a sexual being? Like, I don't see. She's just more like dutiful, and I don't know. Like, it'd be interesting to see.
She was in love with Jaime.
She was.
That's
but
true.
But Tormund is not Jaime, though. I don't know.
Well, he has two hands.
So he's got one. He's got one on Jamie there.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know. I feel like she's so noble and so, you know, like, to her mission and everything. I don't know. Does she take time for herself like that? I don't know.
I think she will. I think that's what's going to be it's the episode 9 is always the big reveal. That's going to be the reveal. That's what we're like, oh, I didn't see that coming. Oh, my gosh.
Anyway. I think it's going to be one of those, you know, 80s teenage movies where, like, they just flirt with it for the next couple of seasons, and then after the war's done, they, like, embrace and kiss each other, and you're like, yay, it all worked out!
And they play the
kiss it's a John me under the dandy twilight. It's a John Hughes film, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Don't you forget
about me. No, no, no.
But then, yeah, then we... Then we get to the final scene, which we've already discussed, and I guess the only thing that's really we need to talk about here is just, you know, the Three-Eyed Raven did die once the Night's King entered. Sadly, because I really wanted to see more of him and him reveal, because, like, in the book, it's highly theorized that he's Lord Bloodraven, which was an old Targaryen bastard.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another reason why I don't really buy into that he's Bran.
Gotcha. Well, but, the show's different than the books.
The show is different than the books, yeah. So if it goes that way, it goes that way. You know, and it could, if they make it interesting, then great. I'm not going to complain about it. Like, oh,
I will complain.
Not you, Jack. Never.
No.
No.
It'll be one of the few times, but I will complain.
Anyway. Let's see here. And then, but then we see he does... warg into Hodor, and that's where he gets his name from, is Hold the Door, eventually turns into Hodor, and that's basically how the show ends, with a young Hodor.
It was a very dramatic scene.
Yeah, it was very dramatic. A few people brought it up, but I gotta give credit to Will Sigmund, who told me first, the day before the episode aired, that Jack Bender directed the episode. Famous longtime Lost director. Little FYI there. I think Jess made a funny joke. Since Jack directed it, they should have played the life and death theme as Hodor was holding the door.
Exactly. I mean, what would you have done if that actually would have played? You know, not again.
But
it was a very
it would have taken away from the hold the door, though.
It's more of a joke. Yes.
But it was kind of a Penny's boat kind of moment.
Yes.
Where it was just.
Well, that's another one, too. Like, so that another meme. I mean, there's going to be a bunch of memes, but like, it's Charlie written on his hand. It says, hold the door, and it's on the window. But yeah, no, it was such a reveal. First of all, I was like, holy crap. Oh my God.
I didn't see him dying. That's where, cause I thought Bran needed him. I mean, now what's the young girl that's dragging on the sled?
Mira.
She's not gonna be able to take him as fast as Hodor can.
Yeah. That's what you wonder. It's like, okay, she's about 50 yards from that door. You know, dragging a teenage boy on a sled. Like, how far do you really think she's going to get in the middle of a blizzard?
It's cold. It's, like I said, blizzard. She's all of 80 pounds. I mean.
But they were going to go through the door. So, like, I don't know. Like, at least it gave him a bit of a head start, hopefully.
Well, those zombie people, they move really fast. Really fast. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Hordor couldn't fight them all off if they caught up to him. So
there is a lot of Hordor to chew on, so maybe that'll hold them off for a while.
It's horrible.
Well, terrible. I'm just saying, you're trying to think of something that would slow them down. There's a lot of Hordor.
A lot of Hordor to go around.
Yeah. Hey, I got an arm over here. Poor Hordor.
So.
Oh, bloody hell! That's
how many people do you think at Comic Con will be dressed up as Hordor holding a door on their back?
Oh, yeah. You just ruined Jay's spoiler. He was going to do it.
No, I wasn't.
I thought he was going as all female Ghostbusters.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, that's another jam.
What happened to you, Jay? You're like muffled.
No, I had to switch to the other mic because we're going to get ready to do.
Okay.
How's that? Is that better? A little bit better, maybe.
No.
Yeah. Oh well. So we're going to switch to phone calls here. So I want to make sure we get that going. It's listener feedback time. So let's go into our first call, guys. What do you say?
Do it.
All right. Here we go.
Let's do it.
Listener feedback.
Hey, Jay, Jack, and Nick. This is Maggie from Northern Virginia, and I just watched the episode of The Door. Okay, I'm going to try to get through this. Did anybody notice that it was directed by Jack Bender, who directed episodes of Lost? He's actually going to direct the next episode of Game of Thrones as well. I saw on IMDb. That got me very excited. Were there any Lost references in this episode? I did not catch any. So, okay, the new red woman lady that was talking to Varys and Tyrion, is that like Melisandre's Pope or something? Like, cause they said she was like the first red woman, or is she like, are they related? Do they know each other? Is the new lady as old as Melisandre? She had one of those necklaces. That was kind of crazy. Arya needs to kick some ass. She needs to kick the waste ass. And, she totally did not like that play. That's going to be an issue. And I'm really excited about that because the lady that she's sort of watching is an actress that I like from Miss Fisher, S.E. Davis, one of the actors. I can't remember. Lady Crane, maybe, I think, something like that. Sansa's kick-ass. Love her. She is going to kill Ramsay, I think. That's my crackpot theory. And basically, which I'm sure you guys will cover, Hodor, poor Hodor. That was just awful. They killed another direwolf. Hodor, that was just, it was so awful. And so, I guess, this always happened. Bran was always there, and Bran always caused it. By the White Walkers attacking, it always caused Hodor to become Hodor, right? Isn't that how the time travel thing works? I don't know. It's going to make my head hurt. It's way too late to make that my head hurt. On a Sunday night. Can't wait to hear what you guys think about this episode. It was very difficult to watch. And my other thought with my friends, we were discussing, is Hodor going to be a White Walker now? I'm not sure we can handle that. And the hold the door memes need to stop right now. I've already seen like three of them, and they need to stop right now. They just do. Okay. Oh, last thing. There was a great look between Tormund and Brienne. It was really funny. He really likes her. It's really funny. Oh, poor Hodor. We'll miss you, Hodor. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right, Maggie. Thank you for the call.
Well, not to say Trump her there, but I did say I thought Sansa was going to kill Ramsay last week.
Man, you can't just let Maggie, like, we've had a tough time giving people a call on the show, and the first one, you're just going to knock him down.
She did say, was there a lost theme in there? They hold the door was mentioned 23 times.
Oh, God. Brutal.
Because Jack Benner said, wait, one more time. Hold the door. All right, now
someone's actually going to go and count that now to see if you're right.
Yeah.
Would I lie?
Yes. So people at home, don't do that, please.
What if it is one of the numbers? Don't you think it would have already came out, though? Because there's got to be some Lost. Because today was the 6th anniversary of Lost finale episode, right? So you think one of those Lost geeks out there would have said, let me count how many times they say hold the door.
Only you, Jeff.
If it was Once Upon a Time, I guarantee you it would have been 23 times.
Yes, but that's why Once Upon a Time is not as good.
Now, will he turn into a White Walker? Is there what's left?
Well, he wouldn't be a White Walker. He'd be undead or whatever they're called.
Now, how much is going to be left of him? Because they were chewing on him pretty good.
Exactly, they're clawing away. But some of those guys walk and they're just skeletons.
Yeah.
So right. I don't think it really matters. But I mean, I'm sure that he probably will be an undead person, but I highly doubt we'll see him. Haven't seen any other one.
Will he still say Hordor, or would it just...
Well, it depends if he has a vocal box left.
Hordor!
Kind of need those muscles to be able to do it, but...
Well, he's a big guy.
But to answer Maggie's question about the Red Woman, this is an ancient order of the fire god, and they come from a land that's to the east, and she's just a part of that order. There's no guarantee that she even knows who Melisandre is, so she's a totally different person.
So the necklaces don't intertwine. They don't connect like the internet or something like that.
That'd be cool.
No, I'm saying it's like if one person takes off the necklace, does another person? I mean, I guess they all take them off at night, but
I guess they're just either. Do you think they make them immortal? You think the necklaces, or do you think
I think it makes them immortal, because there has to be some kind. I guess we'll get the answer for it, right?
It was a really old lady when she took off the necklace, so.
Yeah, she's supposed to be. I think Melisandre is supposed to be like 800 years old,
at least.
Yeah.
With the necklace on, she's aged well.
Well, I guess could she leave the necklace off that long? Because she's 800 years old when she takes it off. That I feel like you just die instantly, because then your body would, the age would catch up to your body, right? I don't know.
Well, maybe it has some powers. You can go like 10 hours without it on. Maybe you can shower with it.
Yeah,
it
takes a while for it to wear off, right?
Exactly.
Oh, man. All right, we have some other... Anything else about Maggie's call before we move on to the emails we have here?
No, that was the only thing that was...
All right. So this one is Valar Morghulis. Is that a Valyrian term that I don't know about?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Almond. Yeah.
Oh, Almond must die. That's right.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry.
Do you watch the show?
I do. I know what that means. Anyway, that's why I have Nick on the show. Anywho, I have a friend who likes shows that have characters you get attached to without the fear of them falling through a moon door. Obviously, this is not the show for her. However, tonight I decided I would defend George R.R. Martin's explanation for why he kills off basically everybody in the series. Only so many can survive with cuts and bruises, and to be fair, there are lots of eunuchs people. War is a central theme in the series, so let's be realistic. All men must die. Then Hordor happened. That was effing sad. The dying, yes, but the whole hold-the-door-slash-Hordor bit. That's what I get. I've been personally victimized by Game of Thrones. Andy in 91911. P.S. That shot of Brienne and Tormund, that was great.
And, it really was.
And she had attached a gif of... such a great look.
Yeah, I saw it.
That's the best. All right. Thank you, Andy. Any thoughts there, guys?
Well, I think, like I said, we should be used to people dying on this show now.
Yeah.
There should be no shock that people die.
Yeah.
And Hodor, it's like, I didn't expect him to die, but when he died, I went, it's Game of Thrones.
Anywho.
Well, yeah, it's like Ramsey said, if you think this has a happy ending, you haven't been paying attention.
Yes.
Because, I mean, that's what makes me laugh when I meet people or I have discussions and they really want, you know, Jon Snow and Dany to end up together as a couple and have kids. And it's like, this isn't, you know, Cinderella. This isn't, you know, a lot of young adult novels. So this is Game of Thrones. There's no guarantee that you'll get a happy ending. It literally could end in a bloodbath, and you know the only person left is Theon.
You mean that's not going to happen? That's not going to happen. They're not going to get together.
It'll happen. Oh, I don't know. They could, but I just can't see George R. R. Martin all of a sudden going from, you know, 5 or 6 books of just bloodbaths and everyone dying to all of a sudden, it all works out.
So, how many Starks will be left by the time this is over?
1.5.
Any of them?
Who knows? Who knows?
Does Tyrion? Oh, do they kill Tyrion off? Can they kill Tyrion off and have the show still be successful?
I don't think Tyrion will die.
Yeah, there's some that I don't think will die, but we'll have to see. We'll have to wait and see.
Anyone can die. Maybe that's there'll be the 9th episode this season.
There you go. All right. So next email here from Lord Patrick. Hey, crew from the Asheville Kingdom. Am I the only person who feels like Westeros is not ready for the Dothraki horde? I mean, yeah, they hate wildlings, but it seems like the wildlings somewhat understand the civilization that exists in Westeros, even if they hate it. The Dothraki will not. Lord Patrick, king of all that he owns. Thoughts there, gentlemen?
Yeah, he has a point.
Well, the question is...
Who's worse?
How are the Dothraki? Dothraki or the wildlings? Which is worse?
Oh, it's just worse. Well, Dothraki. I said the Dothraki have a little bit more fun, but then again, I was like, the wildlings kind of do too.
I guess it depends on what side you're on.
Yeah, because the wildlings, you have that cannibalism sect, so I definitely wouldn't want to be them.
Yeah.
No.
They're kind of gross. Yeah, I think the wildlings are still worse than the... I don't know. Flip a coin.
Well, at least the wildlings have women. Women's have almost some... They have rights there. Right?
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah.
That's true.
They're a little more
advanced. Wildlings, yeah. Yeah.
Anyone can kill.
Yeah. You have to be strong, and if you don't strong, you don't survive. Whereas in the Dothraki, it's like only men are strong, and the women are just kind of objects.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think if you're looking from that angle, maybe the wildlings are better.
Some of the wildlings, not all of the wildlings. that's what I would say.
That's a good cop-out answer.
Yep, that's how I roll. That's how I roll. All right, well, thank you very much, everybody, for your feedback. If anybody else would like to comment for next week's episode, you can give us a call at 385-309-0311. Or
all the time.
Send an email to lostpodcast@gmail.com. All right, guys, it is time for the my favorite part of the Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick, and that is what happens in the book stays in the book. It's when Nick goes over things in relation to the book, maybe what happened that was different from the show. And now that the TV show has somewhat gotten past the books, it is still very interesting to see what bits and pieces were from the book or maybe different from the book. As we go towards down the hill towards the end of the show. So if you want to kind of stay book-ish spoiler-free, if you don't know or you feel like knowing stuff from the book could possibly be spoilery, just stop listening to the show right now. And if you don't care and you want to know and you want to learn more about the history and mythology of the show, keep on listening. All right, Nick, take it away.
All right, well, with... the north, where it said like Littlefinger was telling Sansa that Brendan Tully retook Riverrun. He never really retook Riverrun. This is, like I said earlier, it's just a way for them to kind of get back to the book section and tie in this little bit. River Run has always been in control by the Tullys ever since the War of the Five Kings. When Robb Stark left River Run, he left Brendan Tully in charge of it when he went to go to the Red Wedding. So he's just basically been holding out this entire time under siege by the Lannister army in the book.
Gotcha.
And there will be some tie-ins with some other characters approaching River Run, and I'm sure they'll get to those storylines. We may even get a couple surprises there, but that's the difference for now. Arya is never assigned to kill Lady Crane, the actress, in the book. She's actually sent to infiltrate this play group, and she plays a maid, actually, in this play. And you see it more of her seeing these scenes. She doesn't even know in the play that these are events that happened in Westeros in the book. Because like her dad is not in it, but these other characters like Sansa marrying a little person, things like that, they're in that, but she doesn't really understand that they're actually things that happened in Westeros.
Gotcha.
The difference is that what we've seen, I talked about it last season, was she was actually sent at this point to kill that that ship insurance salesman, the guy that was cheating them, and then she goes and kills the other guy. She was sent to kill him, but she wants to kill him because whereas in this story she's making an excuse not to kill the actress, and the book she's actually very eager to kill the insurance salesman because he's such a bad guy. So that's one of the things that makes me curious as into if she doesn't go through with it versus in the book she does go through with it.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, that would be it.
What happens to her if she doesn't go through? She dies, right? If she doesn't go through with it.
Assumingly.
Well, right. I mean, that's what they're implying.
Right.
But like I said, they're getting the events. They mixed up the events from the book to the show.
Okay.
Because in the show, she's in the play, and then the guy that was on her list that shows up in last season that she kills by dressing up as the prostitute and then kills him, that was the continuation of the play story. So that's, I mean, they've kind of switched stories around. And then, like I said, in the book, we don't know who created the White Walkers. It's just an old man story from the Lord Commander, Night's King. I mean, so we've kind of discussed that already. The biggest chunk is when it comes to the Kingsmoot. This is a lot in book four. The Kingsmoot is a lot of, it drags on a bit, and so they kind of shortened it. But in the Kingsmoot in the book, there are many, many captains that claim the right to be king. And Yara is like number five or six down the line that actually speaks up, as well as Balon's brother Victorion and Euron both claim. And Yara doesn't really have a good claim. She just basically says that, you know, we've been bullied on, we've been defeated, I'm going to make peace with the North now. We need to kind of lick our wounds, which kind of doesn't really win her any favor. She never accuses Euron of killing Balon because no one really knows. It's just a rumor that he might have done it. So they're not going to really, because I mean, that's the thing. That's another big difference, is that kinslaying is a big deal in Westeros. You do not kill your family. It's considered a curse. Mm-hmm. If you do, that's the reason why Tyrion kind of had to banish himself, is because like if you kill your father, you're just low, you're the lowest person on earth. And so for Euron to say, let's go murder my niece and nephew, that's really uncharacteristic. And that's one of the differences I can tell between the show versus the books, is that he never would have said that in the book.
He would have said, let's let them have an accident.
Yeah, or something. I mean, he might have, but it's never going to be that deliberate, because you wouldn't publicly want people to know you're out to kill your family.
Right. It makes perfect sense.
And Victorion is kind of got the best case at first, which is the other brother, and then Euron shows up. There's two things in the books that still have not been shown on the show, and they might not show them. And there's two magical horns. There's one in the north that Mance Rayder's after, and there's one that Euron shows up with, which is an ancient horn that he claims can control dragons. Mm-hmm. And this is what wins him the Seastone Chair. is that he says, you know, not only am I a good fleet commander, but I'm going to go over there and steal these dragons, and then we're going to conquer Westeros as the Ironborn, you know, and then we're going to rule. And so that gets everybody like, yeah, you know, because, yeah, now we'll have dragons and a kick, you know, a really badass fleet. So, but Aeron Greyjoy, after Euron, Aeron Greyjoy, they've shown him on the show, but they haven't said that he is a Greyjoy, is that priest, the one who drowned him. That's okay. Another one of Balon's. That's his brother as well, but they haven't said that on the show.
Oh,
he
really?
Actually hates Euron because he's like one of those really righteous guys. And so after he becomes king, he flees the way that Yara and Theon fled.
Okay.
Yara, though, on the show, she does leave, but there's no bitter blood. Like, he rightfully won the throne, and she leaves with her fleet to go raid Deepwood Mott, which is a town in the north.
Gotcha. Do you think that they're going to do that here, or do you think it's going to be different for where she's going? Her and Theon.
No, I don't think. I can't see her going to the north. I mean, she might go to the north still, and then they might go to Deepwood Mott. And it might help rally some of the Northmen. I don't know. Because it's different. Because Stannis is still alive in the books at this point. And what happened is that she goes and conquers Deepwood Mott, and then Stannis' army comes and conquers Yara's army, and then he takes Yara prisoner. And then Theon shows up, and it's just a totally different route. But what he does, though, to kind of smooth what Euron does to smooth the thing is that he says to his brother Victorion, because obviously if you're king of the Iron Islands, you can't sail all the way to Essos and just leave your land to whoever it wants. It doesn't make sense like they're doing it in the show. He takes the ode to Dany and propose this deal to her while I rule. And when I'm married, I'm going to take over Westeros, and I'll give you the kingdom for the Iron Islands. And so that's how the two brothers kind of come to an agreement.
Gotcha.
But like I said, they're combining two characters into one on the show.
Gotcha.
But secretly, Victorian is going to go and try to marry Danny.
Because that's how he plays. Well, awesome. Anything?
That's basically, you know, where. Exactly. It's like, you know, why would I go and no? I want the power for myself.
Yeah.
And then the Red Priest is not yet in Meereen on the book. She's on her way. Most of this whole speech is coming from when Tyrion is in Volantis and he's overhearing the Red Priestess say that, you know, Dany is reborn and she's the princess that was chosen and all this. And so they're just kind of reaffirming that on the show. And then the last little tidbit is the houses that John mentioned that were rallied to them are the exact same houses that rallied for Stannis once he conquers Deepwood Mott, so it's kind of convenient.
Gotcha. Yeah. So they're kind of like maybe merging that a little bit.
So that's pretty much. Yeah, they're merging it. And it's the same as like they're merging a lot of the loose end storylines with Meereen all into Tyrion's storyline to give him something to do. It's the same thing. Like they're taking all the Stannis stuff and putting it on Jon.
Yep. Cool.
So.
Awesome. Well,
not a whole lot of other than the Kingsmoot, a lot of stuff is just kind of nitpicky. But there are little subtle differences.
Nice. Awesome. Well, thank you, Nick. As always, what happens in the book stays in the book is a fantastic section, and we appreciate what you do for it. So with that, we're going to wrap up this week's Game of Thrones, Jay, Jack, and Nick. If you'd like to give us a call, you can at 385-309-0311. And you can also give us an email to lostpodcast@gmail.com. We usually record the day after, so you have about 24 hours to send in your feedback. We want to send a special thanks from Tack from Tokyo, Brad from Chicago, and Eckhart Richter for contributing at a significant amount on our Patreon page. If you'd like to become a patron today, you can do so by going to janejack.com. At the top of that page, there's a Become a Patron link. Click on that. It'll take you right to our Patreon page. Contribute $1 or more a month, and it all helps to make these shows possible. All of our shows, like Game of Thrones, Survivor, The Amazing Race, Married Man Show, Ramblecast coming back this season, our Lost podcast. It all makes it possible because of your generous contributions. So thank you very much. All right, guys, that is it for this week. We will see you guys next week for the sixth episode as we kind of head towards the end of this awesome season of Game of Thrones. Until then, hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.
Hold the door.